It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC, reaching the entire New York, New Jersey metro area and worldwide at mybradio.com. mybradio.com. That is the platform that hosts every single past episode of Mind Your Business here on 77 WABC. Special thank you to the great listenership of this show. The Nielsen ratings has us consistently in the top 10 in New York AM radio. Of course, Nielsen is the global measurement and data analytics company, so that speaks for itself. Thank you for your for your confidence that we will deliver great business advice, content, week in and week out, and tonight is going to be no different. The listeners know, we already mentioned last week that we're going to have on Dr. Rich Roberts for a second week in a row because we didn't even get to 20% of what we were supposed to cover. He has so much to cover. We're going to see. Hopefully, we can get it into tonight's show. And for those of you that missed last week's show, it's up on the archives. Of course, a shout out to those tuned in that picked it up on Lakewood Scoop. Special shout out to all those. But it is permanently up on the archives at mybradio.com, mybradio.com. Also, all of our past shows are available by going to iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. Many of them are on YouTube, the ones that are video. So you can access all the great content that we've shared over the last 5 years. And, of course, last week's show with Dr. Roberts, where we talked, last week specifically, we talked about corporate management, seizing opportunities, MBWA, FIFO. By the way, before we jump in, can I share a cute story, Dr. Roberts?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay.
It's your show.
Okay, thank you. So, you know, this is a business show, but, you know, you never know the impact that it has. Get ready for a cute Shalom Bayis story, okay? It's marriage harmony for those out there. Well, there a listener, someone who's an avid listener to the show, listen, and they heard about FIFO, first in, first out. Great. And they said, I don't believe it. You're going to solve the Shalom Bayis problem. What was the problem? The eggs in the fridge were always spoiled. Now, you you probably know right away. Why the person that was stocking the fridge always put the newest eggs on top of the pile of dozens of eggs. So whenever they were making eggs, guess which one came out first?
That's hysterical. I used to do the same thing in a refrigerator.
So then they're like...
Meaning FIFO.
Exactly. So they're like, oh... Okay, so that means I have to lift up the previous ones, stick in the newest date on the bottom. Bingo! FIFO solved it.
I do want to say that I don't know how well this wife is going to take to him putting in a barcoding system if he wants to take it to the next step.
Oh, that's great. Oh, this is just fantastic. So, folks, hold on to your seats. We're going to talk about so many additional critical business concepts. We're going to talk about implementing systems and processes, sales and marketing, effective delegation, and other vital business topics. Again, my guest is Richard Roberts, MD, PhD, medical doctor, doctor of biophysics, and former pharmaceutical industry CEO of URL Pharma. Thank you so much for joining me here once again on Mind Your Business. Thank you, Dr. Roberts.
Thank you for having me.
This is great. So we're going to jump into systems and processes. We've had many guests over the years on the program that have talked about, say, the viability of almost any type of business out there is building, in order to scale or even to at any level to be successful, there has to be systems and processes in place. Perhaps you could, you know, elaborate on that.
The first time I actually learned about SOPs was when I joined our company. It was a small pharmaceutical manufacturing operation ongoing. And according to FDA regulations, everything has to be done on the manufacturing side by standard operating procedures. I mean, absolutely everything. There are separate SOPs for every function having to do with the manufacturing of pharmaceuticals. So, and people have to be trained in them. That you have to actually certify the trainers, keep records, retrain them. because if you deviate even in the smallest way from SOPs, the FDA will cite you on it. Just give an example. When you're mixing the powders, because in a tablet, if you look at a tablet, it says it's a drug of a certain dose. Well, let's say the dose of the tablet is 1 milligram. The smallest tablet you can actually pick up with your fingers is about 100 milligrams. So there are many, many other powders that are put in that tablet. Some are just fillers as inactive ingredients. Others are preservatives. Others might modify how quickly the tablet dissolves, if it's a sustained release or a delayed release tablet. There's also a disintegration agents. First, you have to have binders to bind the powders together. So when you go to make a tablet and you compress it, compress the powders in a machine into a tablet, that the tablet will stick together. But then you might need disintegration agents, which when they get in the stomach and they absorb water, they swell, they break the tablet apart so that the drug will actually dissolve. There's also a lubricant, because the powders are compressed in pistons, metal pistons, under about 10 tons of pressure. So you need to make sure the tablet doesn't stick and crack when it's popped out of that cylinder after it's been compressed. So there's all kinds of powders that have to be mixed together, and there's a whole science in this. I was telling you last time that most people who don't know that they don't know. Most right. people don't know. Most people don't know the immense amount of technology and science that goes into making pharmaceutical tablets. So anyway, you take all these powders and you need to mix them evenly, homogeneity across the entire blend. So when you go to compress tablets out of it, you don't get hot spots, which have too much drug, or weak spots, or cold spots where there's just inactive ingredients. So sometimes you have to add water or alcohol to the mixing process. And then the trays you then spread that sort of pasty material on trays and put them in ovens. So according to the standard operating procedure, you have to spread the powders, the wet powders out on trays. And then you have to go to the batch record, meaning the worker does, the production person, and mark that the powder was put on the trays. Then you have to put the powder in the oven and turn the oven on. Then you have to go back to the batch record and mark that you put it in the oven and turn the oven on. Mm. Well, you know, we had a case where a worker spread the powder on the tray, put the tray in the oven, turned turned it on, and then just went back and filled out both steps in the procedure. Yes, he put it on the tray, and yes, he turned the oven on. Bang, FDA violation. An FDA inspector found him doing it, which, by the way, if we had known he was doing it, we would have also made sure that he did it correctly. Right. But FDA violation, that you did things, you didn't take a break in between two steps to write down that the first step had been done. So that was my first exposure to standard operating procedures. But what I noticed, now, the last time we spoke, I spoke mostly about the company when it was very relatively small. I had to work very hard to save it from bankruptcy. It had about $30 million a year in sales. And then I would jump into different areas. Right. I would go into purchasing because, again, we were on the verge of bankruptcy. We needed to make money, to try to save the company. Right. So I would even be involved with the purchasing people, making calls to our vendors, trying to make deals, trying to get lower prices for them so we could get some profitability and try to save this company. And I would do this all over the company, not really in the manufacturing side, but more on the commercial side. But what I found was, as much as I would jump in there with my enthusiasm or my dedication, then when I walked away, things would revert back to the old ways. Things would slip. Mm. The purchasing department, some people there, the guy I was working with, wasn't using much creativity in trying to get lower prices. So as the company became a little more sophisticated, I realized that we really had to start to implement standard operating procedures in many, many areas. Now, as you go up higher up the management, as the company becomes larger and more sophisticated, more and more, if you're going to manage this correctly, you need to do less and less of what you used to do. and therefore you need to leave criteria, standard procedures, or at the very least, objectives and criteria that people are going to be measured on after every calendar quarter, financial quarter, to make sure that things are on track. And of course, you're getting interim reports on which are key to make sure you're measuring in interim reports all the key parameters in your business. So in our case, whether it was daily sales or weekly sales, production numbers, inventory levels, there were so many things, amount of money being spent in all the different areas. That's really what needs to be done.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, mm-hmm. One last little point here.
Sure.
When I first joined the company, they had basically a kid running accounting. He had a bachelor's degree in accounting. He had no management experience except in the company. And when I said I joined the company, they had about $30 million a year in sales. They were losing, according to him, about $3 million a year, mm-hmm. but they didn't really know. He was making up numbers as he went along because he did not have control of the operation. As you get to higher levels, and that's a whole story in itself, again, people in management chirping in my ear what I need to do, they told me about the need to hire a chief financial officer. And the difference between a chief financial officer and an accountant is an accountant will do excellent work with the numbers, the spreadsheets, filling out the spreadsheets as they need to be done. But the chief financial officer, if he's doing a proper job, is going to have a different level of management experience. He's going to set up the budgets with me, but set up the budgets across all the departments. He's going to have his accountants going to those departments and all the different things they need, understand what their spending expenditure needs are now, what they'll be for the next 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, how this will play out given our sales and our profitability. And he will be going to the vice, and this happens as we got bigger, to the vice presidents of the departments and basically pounding his fist, but going and saying, challenging them, you're over budget on this number. Why? And they have to explain it. They have to own up to it. And by the way, if they're under budget on something, mm-hmm. you need to know why also. And asking why doesn't mean it's bad.
Right.
They could be under budget because they were able to do things more efficiently. That's great. Or they could be under budget in research and development because the projects have all fallen behind, which is very, very damaging to a pharmaceutical company. So when you go to finally get a chief financial officer, it better not be some guy who locks himself in his office with his door closed and thinks he's going to do great spreadsheets for you and that's going to be enough or satisfying for what you need.
Mm.
He has to be a guy and say, hey, generically, could be a girl, could be a woman, who's going to go manage. You're going to manage how the money is flowing in the company, where you think it will be, giving you eventually, again, it's got bigger, we sort of get cash flow projection reports, and he becomes someone helping you to manage the business.
Now, as the company continues to scale, and delegation, as you mentioned, delegation, of course, is key. You're going to have to let go and have responsible people in place. I understand you have, there's a concern about upward delegation. Perhaps you can explain what that is.
Yes. It's especially true in a smaller mom and pop company, which is what I joined, that tries to make the transition to a larger company. But even in a larger company, it still is true. It is you're the president of the company, the CEO of the company, and a vice president walks in and says, "I got this problem," and just lays the problem out for you, and then walks away, like now it's my problem, and that's called upward delegation. This is in his department. Again, when I say his, I'm using that just gender-neutral,
right.
Him or her, mm-hmm. whoever mm-hmm. happens to be the person. And we also had some women who were just superb executives in the company, mm-hmm. as well as obviously in every other level. Mm-hmm. But here's the, so I'm saying, when I first joined the company, I saw this. My uncle was, again, as a mom and pop company, he was trying to run everything. The veins were like popping in his head. People would come in hysterical with problems and tell him the problems. They would, you know, run out, and they weren't doing anything. And they were upwardly delegating it to him. He should be delegating it down to them. And I want to tell you something that years later, the guy who was with us for a number of years as a senior vice president of sales and marketing, who had previously worked at one of the big pharma companies, Bristol-Myers Squibb, and he said that the president there told him, if you bring me a problem and you don't also bring me a solution, then maybe you're the problem.
Wow. That's pretty, that's straight up. Straight up. Wow. And wow. Challenge them like that.
Yes. So if you're going to grow your company, you need to work very hard, but you can't continue to do what you used to do. And you need to delegate. And you can't let people upwardly delegate to you. Now listen, I don't want you to get the impression at all that I wasn't involved in problem solving. Right. Many times I would have 8 or 10 hours of meetings scheduled continuously, one after another after another. This meeting for 1 hour, this meeting for half an hour, this meeting for 2 hours. I'd have everybody together and we'd be talking about problems, brainstorming solutions. But you have to know that when you leave, this guy who heads that department, or these three people that are involved in it, because many times they're multidisciplinary projects, they have to be held responsible, and you have to put it in writing. Now, again, as the company gets larger, you actually have an area of expertise called project managers. These are people, they do Gantt charts, which are charts on a given project showing all the key steps in a bar form and what the dates are from the people that are involved that they're supposed to deliver, get those things done, and they track all those things. And eventually, as the company grows, you need to manage by exception. In other words, there's so many things happening, and the company gets so big, you need to manage by where things are not hitting what they're supposed to hit. And as opposed to kind of knowing everything else that's going on that's also going well. And you also have to have, obviously, people underneath you, your direct reports, who are going to have the type of executive capability so that they can intervene and make decisions on their own. And lastly, I'll just tell you, this is one of my chief financial officers taught this to me. Mm-hmm. And again, as I said, I hired in people as we got, you know, the company grew and it got bigger, and it was not a straight line up by any means. But I hired in people with expertise in different areas, and I learned from them. I learned from them along the way. So one of my chief financial officers, one of the chief financial officers. I'm not sure if we want to go down.
this might be too far afield. It's going to be good radio.
I'm sorry, let's move on.
my guest is none other than Richard Roberts, medical doctor, doctor of biophysics, former pharmaceutical industry CEO, and he's sharing the be all and end all. Well, that's what we're not getting to everything, but the ins and outs, many of the ins and outs that are so key to being successful in business. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Came across a great commercial real estate opportunity and need money fast? At TBG Funding, we understand the challenge. Waiting months for a bank-issued loan can cost you your project. That's where we come in. Call TBG Funding today at 718-705-9300 to get the funding you need to get your project off the ground. That's 718-705-9300. With loans closed in 23 states and over $800 million in closed loans, TBG Funding can help you close any commercial real estate deal in as little as 3 days so that you can close deals quickly and efficiently. Visit tbgfunding.com to find out how we can help you capitalize on your next opportunity. That's tbgfunding.com.
Finally, a payroll service that does things your way. At Brands Paycheck, you're not a number, you're a partner. Brands Paychex's personalized payroll solutions ensure that your business receives your financial information the way you want it. From complete payroll services and time tracking to benefits administration and HR solutions, Brands Paychex helps streamline your business's payroll process and maximize productivity. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation. Brands Paychex services a wide range of industries nationwide, including hospitality, transportation, B2B, B2C, nonprofit, finance, retail, healthcare, real estate, and more. Learn why companies nationwide rely on Brands Paychex. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation today or visit online at BrandsPaycheck.com. That's BrandsPaycheck.com.
Missed an episode of Mind Your Business? We've got you covered. Check out our YouTube channel, Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, to hear interviews with business executives and thought leaders whenever and wherever you want. That's Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis.
Every accounting firm has a history. The history of Saul Friedman & Company spans 45 years of commitment, dependability, and reliability for our clients. A client of Saul Friedman & Company is never alone in making critical business decisions. Behind each business move stands the full resources of an accounting firm with the financial know-how to inspire confidence and ensure success. Call 718-232-1111 now to find out how Saul Friedman & Company can help you grow your business. There's a reason our tagline is accounting with accountability. That is what we believe in, and that is the ethic we follow. For a free consultation, call 718-232-1111. That's 718-232-1111. Or visit our website at snfco.com. That's snfco.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC. Of course, a special shout out. It's Mother's Day for those tuning in on the broadcast. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Whether you're in business or not, you all we're in the business of saying thank you to our moms out there. Dr. Roberts, you know, perhaps you give a shout out to your mom.
Oh, well, hi, Mom. My mother is 92 years old. She'll be 93 in August and doing great.
Beautiful.
Hope she enjoys this show.
Beautiful. And those
Happy Mother's Day.
It's Happy Mother's Day. And of course, a special shout out those that are tuning in on the podcast that will be listening to this after Mother's Day. Yes, as the cliche goes, every day is Mother's Day. Before the break, we were talking about assigning responsibilities and having executives, of course, as a company scales, having quality and competent executives to oversee and delegate. Now, I hope it's okay, Dr. Roberts. You know, you kind of punted there. You're keeping us in suspense. You know, radio is, you're going to start getting bombarded. What was that all about? Perhaps, is it okay if I ask you, could you share it?
Sure. No problem. Okay. I just didn't want to get too far afield.
Okay.
One of the chief financial officers, when I first joined the company, mm-hmm. and we were near bankruptcy, I would get involved sometimes in going into the purchasing department, like I said, mm-hmm. and trying to save $4,000, $10,000 on our purchasing of a pharmaceutical product from another manufacturer. As we grew, it became a point where if I was going to grow this company, if I was going to manage the growth of this company correctly, I certainly had to put in criteria performance for these departments, and I had to step up and step back from that level of involvement and only do things that were more at higher levels that mm-hmm. were more that had more dollars involved. Mm-hmm. So one of the chief financial officers had implemented a very good system where it was that as we grew, it became that people down the management chain were able to sign off on expenditures of varying amounts. So whereas I might have been involved personally initially in making calls to vendors and trying to get, save another $5,000, $10,000, mm-hmm. eventually I wouldn't be involved in a project that had an economic value of less than $1 million, $2 million plus dollars of expenditure for our company. But of course, when you're doing things like that, you're hoping that you're gonna make $1 billion or whatever. Not that we ever did that, but that's what your hope is. So he implemented, this chief financial officer implemented a gradated expenditure capability system, whereas the manager in this department or that department at this level could sign off on expenses of $5,000. Mm-hmm. And after that, a manager could sign off on an expense of $20,000 and higher up the level. Mm-hmm. And eventually, the CFO, vice presidents or senior vice presidents could sign off on expenditures of, I think, several hundred thousand dollars without my approval. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you need to have a full accounting and finance department that will be investigating and making sure that nobody's doing anything
right.
inappropriate.
Right.
But that is what you need to do as you grow.
Mm. Now, if it's okay, we're going to move to sales and marketing. But my first question, really, which also has to do with scaling, came in from a former pharmaceutical analyst for Standard & Poor's. And the question is, and I get questions and feedback all the time, and I appreciate it to all those out there. This question was as follows. Dr. Roberts, I see that you were very successful in shoring up and boosting your company's bottom line through astute cost-cutting and expense streamlining. But as we know, another key corporate goal is to succeed in top-line growth. For example, did your firm achieve competitive edges in terms of new drug launches or superior marketing tactics?
Okay, that's a very astute question. The answer is, when I first joined the company and we were near bankruptcy and we didn't have the ability to grow sales very quickly, profitably, then cutting costs, whether it was expenditures on our operations or whether it was the cost of goods, was critical. But if you want to grow and be big, absolutely, you need to grow your sales and grow your profitability. Now, there's a concept in business of products that are commodities. And I don't really know, per se, oil, you know, or wheat, but, you know, one type of oil, I mean, oil from the ground, you know, Brent crude or whatever, one is more easily refined than the other. When it comes to wheat, I'm guessing that one farmer's kernels of wheat might be a little thicker than the other. But when we were just a generic drug company, for the most part, you are the ultimate commodity. Not only must your ibuprofen or whatever drug it is, acetazolamide, it doesn't matter what the drug is, not only must your product be manufactured to the exact same standards as every other generic company's version of that product, but you may not, by law, you may not make it any better or any worse than the others, and by law, you may not advertise that yours has any better quality than the others. It's actually illegal to do so. So at that point, you'll try to do what's called value-added services. You'll try to have better customer service. You'll try to make sure that your inventories are managed better so the customers can get very quick shipment. I remember eventually one of our competitors who had been very successful at a time when we were struggling and they had tons of cash because they had some major successes, they actually gave their products to the wholesalers on consignment. Mm. So they said, we're going to give you wholesalers all the product. You don't have to pay for it. And of course, companies are always concerned about cash. Right. Maybe not Apple, but at this point, but most companies are. So this competitor of ours gave the product to the wholesaler. They said, you don't have to pay for it. Now the wholesalers come to us and say, how about your product?
Let us also
have it in our warehouse and not pay for it until we sell it. And we simply couldn't afford to do it.
Right.
If I could just finish here. But then eventually you want to get out of the commodity business. You want to get a products that are medically needed and you want to have innovations in them that you can get patents on and exclusivities. And that was actually the key to going from maybe about $150 million in sales of product to how we were able to jump to about $600 million a year in sales with about half of that, about $250 million of pre-tax income.
Mm. Staying on the topic of sales and marketing,
Can I say one thing about that, though?
Sure.
That transition, okay, again, lots of everything here is long stories that are I'm cutting short. But in 2004, some of the vice presidents or directors that had been going to India to buy pharmaceutical raw materials for our generic products were reporting to me that the Indian manufacturers are coming to America to get FDA approvals to manufacture generic drugs. And whereas we paid our employees very, very well and paid for their full health care and all kinds of other benefits, these Indian companies were paying their employees literally $25 a month.
Wow.
So when I saw there was no way that we could possibly compete against that, and we had just had a success using an in-licensed technology to beat the patent on a big branded product that we had exclusively, I used those many tens of millions of dollars of profit to transition into going from a generic drug company to one that was also, and then eventually mostly, a scientific and medically driven company where we were working on innovations, medical scientific innovations. I have multiple patents myself. Others in the company have patents. And when we had successes in those, which of course are very high risk and very difficult and require a tremendous amount of intellectual analysis, thought, development, as well as tons of research and development and interim results. As those successes were able to come in, and if you want to talk about sales and marketing changed radically as we went from a commodity sales company to one dealing with proprietary products with medical needs. But as we were able to get those exclusive positions, that's based on intellectual property, patents, that's where we really had the astronomical growth.
Now, of course, I want to stay on sales and marketing, but just one key takeaway that I want to share with the listeners that was just spoken about by Dr. Roberts is he saw an oncoming threat that was would have been a death blow to the company. I mean, if there's a competitor that's paying employees $25 a month, there's just no way that you'll avoid that oncoming train coming down the tracks. And this applies to companies today. If there's some opportunity, even if you've been doing something really well for 10 years, 20 years, and you see another opportunity, you should keep your eyes open. I just want to, you know, before we go back to sales and marketing, that's a great takeaway right there. That, you know, there was a threat that was an existential threat to the company. You quickly skipped along.
And absolutely, 100, you're 100% correct. The classic business case, again, I never went to business school, but I learned from, you know, people who did, is the buggy whip company. The company that made the whips that the buggy drivers, meaning, you know, coach drivers, would use to hit the horses. When the car started to come, when the first Model T was manufactured, they didn't have the foresight to see what was coming or to think about it and to make changes, they got destroyed. And the same thing happened to Kodak and Polaroid, which were two of the biggest companies in the United States, and selling cameras with film. And they weren't able, for whatever the reason was, that's another discussion, they weren't able to make the transition when digital photography came out. They got destroyed. Xerox, making copy machines, was one of the biggest companies in the country. They were part of the Dow, and did they go into bankruptcy? But you know, when computers came out, the scanners. So you must absolutely, as a CEO, you must be looking at the trends and looking at the technologies, looking at the competing products, competing technologies, competing companies, and you have to try to anticipate where things are going. And in all of these decisions, you will never have complete information. So you have to weigh the risks that are involved, how much cash you can afford to try to spend to get in the proper people to change your technology, change how you do things, change your product, and make sure you're always trying to move ahead of the curve. So that's what happened in 2004, and we got our first new drug approval in 2007. And boy, did we breathe a sigh of relief at that point, because the business was deteriorating.
My guest is Richard Roberts, MD, PhD, medical doctor of biophysics, and former pharmaceutical industry CEO of URL Pharma for nearly a quarter century. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Came across a great commercial real estate opportunity and need money fast? At TBG Funding, we understand the challenge. Waiting months for a bank-issued loan can cost you your project. That's where we come in. Call TBG Funding today at 718-705-9300 to get the funding you need to get your project off the ground. That's 718-705-9300. With loans closed in 23 states and over $800 million in closed loans, TBG Funding can help you close any commercial real estate deal in as little as 3 days so that you can close deals quickly and efficiently. Visit tbgfunding.com to find out how we can help you capitalize on your next opportunity. That's tbgfunding.com.
Finally, a payroll service that does things your way. At Brands Paycheck, you're not a number, you're a partner. Brands Paycheck's personalized payroll solutions ensure that your business receives your financial information the way you want it. From complete payroll services and time tracking to benefits administration and HR solutions, Brands Paycheck helps streamline your business's payroll process and maximize productivity. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation. Brands Paycheck services a wide range of industries nationwide, including hospitality, transportation, B2B, B2C, nonprofit, finance, retail, healthcare, real estate, and more. Learn why companies nationwide rely on Brands Paycheck. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation today or visit online at BrandsPaycheck.com. That's BrandsPaycheck.com.
Missed an episode of Mind Your Business? We've got you covered. Check out our YouTube channel, Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, to hear interviews with business executives and thought leaders whenever and wherever you want. That's Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis.
Every accounting firm has a history. The history of Sol, Friedman & Company spans 45 years of commitment, dependability, and reliability for our clients. A client of Sol, Friedman & Company is never alone in making critical business decisions. Behind each business move stands the full resources of an accounting firm with the financial know-how to inspire confidence and ensure success. Call 718-232-1111 now to find out how Sol, Friedman & Company can help you grow your business. There's a reason our tagline is accounting with accountability. That is what we believe in, and that is the ethic we follow. For a free consultation, call 718-232-1111. That's 718-232-1111. Or visit our website at snfco.com. That's snfco.com.
Cars for kids, K-A-R-S, cars for kids, 1-877 cars for kids, donate your car today.
To learn more about our programs and to donate, go to carsforkids.com. That's cars with a K. Pickup is quick and easy. You'll also get a vacation voucher and maximum tax deduction.
1-877 cars for kids, K-A-R-S, cars for kids, 1-877 cars for kids, donate your car today.
Also accepting boats, motorcycles, RVs, and real estate donations.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC. Thank you so much for joining, and a special shout out to all the mothers out there, all the moms out there. Happy Mother's Day. My guest this evening is none other than Richard Roberts, MD, PhD, medical doctor, doctor of biophysics, and former pharmaceutical industry CEO for 24 years of URL Pharma. Dr. Roberts is just sharing so much. And he was on the show last week. Last week we talked about so many topics, including FIFO, MBWA. I'm sure you're curious what that stands for. Guess what? It's available by going to mybradio.com and listen to the podcast, because he shared so much incredible business guidance, advice, perspective, everything. All you have to do is go to mybradio.com. And actually, if you scroll down on the page of Dr. Roberts, you'll see, let's say you like listening to your podcast on TuneIn. It's on TuneIn. It's on Spotify. It's on Google Play. It's on the iTunes store. It's all there. It's available for free by going. The easiest way to access every single show and the one with Dr. Roberts last week, mybradio.com, mybradio.com. Well, Dr. Roberts, before the break, we were talking about sales and marketing. Now, perhaps we could share a few minutes on scaling a sale, building an effective sales team, and overseeing the fact that they are, because we know sales is the lifeblood of a business. How do you build an effective sales team?
So sales and marketing, again, I knew almost basically nothing about it when I joined the company, but it changed radically as we went from a generic drug company that was selling commodities to wholesalers from whom the pharmacies would buy, to then when we had exclusive patented products with novel health improving innovations, in which case we had to be more concerned with not the wholesaler level, but at the pharmacy level and the patient level. Is the drug being used? How it's being used? What are the factors that are affecting it? What are the demographics of the people that are using it? And also insurance reimbursements, which comes into tier 1, 2, and 3, co-pays and all those things. But that came later when we had proprietary products. If I just give you the bottom line on sales, building a sales team, it is probably one of the most important lessons in all of life. And that is to know that people only do what they're incentivized to do. People only do what serves them. Now, what makes the difference between a selfish person and an altruistic person is that the selfish person is only interested in what will directly satiate their immediate needs, whereas an altruistic person can get pleasure himself by helping others. But you could even say in the extreme, if a mother runs into a burning building to save her child at the risk of her own life, it's because she's incentivized to do so because she values that child's life more than she values her own life. Throughout life, in any area where you're dealing with other people, you have to see how the incentives are aligned. If they're aligned in the same direction, that's fantastic. If they're not aligned in the same direction, you're in trouble. And if they are aligned in the same direction and you don't like how successful someone else is being, then that's your own miserable personality disorder problem. Let me explain. But you have to be very careful how you set up the incentives. So we have salespeople, and let's say we give them a small salary but big incentives. Mm-hmm. And if you sell these drugs, if you sell whatever, $1 million worth, you're going to get this percentage of it. And if you're going to sell $2 million worth, you're going to get this much more percentage of it. Okay, great. But if you don't have control over the pricing, most salespeople will just end up setting their own price at below your cost. They'll get their bonuses and they'll put, and you go out of business. Right. I remember one of the biggest drug companies in the country decided to go into generic drugs, and they hired a president to run their generic drug division. Now, they were used to selling proprietary drugs where they had exclusive positions, and they're very concerned about the market share. They're getting 13% of the market share, 60% of market share, whatever it is. But that's important because if there's, five drugs that people can use for high blood pressure and all of them are exclusive products for five different companies, your market share of the blood pressure market is very critical. So what they did is talking about very high paid, big national brand drug company guys. I told you before, watch out for these people.
Yeah.
So they gave him an incentive plan based on market share of generic drugs. So when his company got a generic drug approved, he just cut the price that he sold it at below everyone's cost, He got the majority of the market share, and he got a bonus. But of course, he cost his company many, many millions of dollars, and he cost the rest of the industry many, many millions of dollars because he dropped the price so low that everyone was losing money on it. So you need to set, you want to have a great sales team. You obviously, we're not going to talk now about the qualities of the sales guy, and his ability to sell and his history, but you need to make sure the incentives are aligned properly. But on the other side, if you set up the incentive, so your products are priced at what makes it a respectable profit for your company. And the more this guy sells, the more money he's going to make. And the more he sells, the more money you're going to make. It is not uncommon to find that a superstar sales guy, who then, let's say, makes $1 million a year, make up a number, because he sold so much product that the management in the company says, are you kidding? We have to fire him. He's making too much money. That's their own personality issue. He might be making more money than the president of the company. My opinion is, if he makes $1 million a year, but the result of his doing that is we make up a number, 10 million, I hope this guy makes $1 billion a year. Who cares he makes more money than me? It's great. He's making money for the company. So the number one key I would say for the sales team is make sure the incentives are properly aligned, and that's very critical, very, very critical. And then you obviously can have people managing them. You have support materials going out to them. As we get more sophisticated into our own branded pharmaceutical products, there are major FDA regulations about what they can say or not say to doctors. And you got to train these people they don't do something with like a wink and a nod, telling a doctor, well, it's not really approved for this use, but it does work for that, because you can end up with criminal charges as a result of that and major fines. So it changes as the nature of the products you're selling changes, but make sure the incentives are aligned.
Now, Dr. Roberts, we have only approximately 5-10 minutes left. Perhaps we could spend just a couple of minutes on marketing. I'll ask a specific question, and then I know you have so many amazing stories, but in particular, back in the a bit of a dark period in 2001 after the terrible attacks on the Twin Towers and around, and of course in Washington, and in Pennsylvania, when there was also was followed immediately by anthrax attacks. But just quickly on marketing, what's your advice for a company that needs to market on a few different levels? Like a pharmaceutical company, you need to talk to doctors, you need to talk to hospitals, then there are influencers, and patients themselves, but they're not directly your customer. What's your advice on that?
Well, so you're saying you went from the anthrax attacks to how to market to people who are not your direct customers.
Right. Let's say from an advertising perspective.
Right. So marketing is not advertising. When I joined up the company, again, small commodity generic company, marketing was sending out advertisements, putting out an advertisement in a pharmaceutical in a pharmacy industry journal. But that's not marketing. That's not real marketing. Real marketing is, again, as we're selling product, where our end user that we need to affect and service are the actual patients themselves who are getting and the doctors writing those prescriptions. In that case, what marketing does is marketing is analyzing enormous amounts of data to understand what the doctor's choices are for this disease. Educating the doctors in the disease. And by the way, again, it is illegal now to tell the doctor, you've got to use our product and everybody else's product is lousy and ours is the only one that works. You have to actually hire independent thought leaders who are known experts in that area of medicine to then give lectures on it. And you have to basically hope that they will give a significant amount of attention an endorsement to your product, but believe it or not, you really can't control it, and you don't know if it's going to happen. Now, you may decide not to continue with them once that particular doctor, once that period is over, but you really cannot influence it whatsoever. This is according to FDA regulations. So there are a lot of very specifics in the FDA area. If I could just go to the anthrax story.
Yes, please. Yes.
So when the anthrax attack occurred, it turned out that there's an old generic drug called doxycycline that works to basically cure anthrax infections. You just need to know that someone's infected with the anthrax, give them doxycycline. I'm sure many of your listeners have taken it for pneumonias or bronchitis or whatever, and it works great, and it's very inexpensive. So when the anthrax attacks occurred, we had, right now with coronavirus, you see hydroxychloroquine has like disappeared from pharmacy shelves. Mm-hmm. When the anthrax attack occurred, a lot of people in the country wanted to buy doxycycline, and the shelves got wiped out. So, and it was a very cheap generic drug. In a bottle of 100 tablets or capsules, we probably made literally like 20 cents, 30 cents gross profit. Mm-hmm. So we could have easily raised the price of the product to make, you know, something more substantial to really help the company, but we decided we're not going to do that. We then got contacted from a department in HHS, Health and Human Services, called the Metropolitan Rapid Deployment Force. And they said that they want to stockpile doxycycline so that if any of the major metropolitan areas in the country get hit with an anthrax attack, then they can take our doxycycline and just rush it in to those areas. But the trouble is, because they're a government agency, they have to buy it at government prices. And the government prices were so low that the little bit of money that we made profit on these bottles, we wouldn't make any profit. But I thought, you know what, as our loyal duty, by the way, we are manufacturing like crazy, we're going to sell it to the Metropolitan Rapid Deployment Force. We're going to sell it to them. We're going to sell half of our production. Mm. Now, again, they're a part of HHS. Another department in HHS is FDA. So we wrote to FDA that we can greatly increase our production of doxycycline to meet the need if FDA will allow us to use some larger equipment than what we're already approved for to make a product, sulfamethoxazole with trimethoprim, Bactrim is the brand name, make another product that is extremely stable, rock solid stable. We might have had 2 or 3 years expiration dating on it, 5, 6, 7 years out, it's still rock solid stable. FDA got back to us and said no. And you need to know is, in general, when it comes to government agencies, these people live and die by the regulations. If they make an exception to a regulation and something goes wrong, they might lose their job. If they just stick to the regulation and they don't make any kind of executive decision, then they're never going to get in trouble. So even though FDA turned us down on this, I said, I don't care. We're still going to give half our production to the Metropolitan Rapid Deployment Force at below market prices. And we did that. The next thing we know, we get a notice from the Labor Department that because we're now selling to the government, we have to be inspected for our affirmative action program. I went ballistic. You mean we could sell as much of this product as we can make. We could have raised the price, but we didn't. We're going to donate half our production to the government because they really want it. I'm doing it as a loyal citizen. And the result of this is we're now going to get a Labor Department inspection for business that we didn't want. But I have to give the Labor Department, which is a rare exception in my experience for government agencies, I have to give them a lot of credit. So I had one of our law firms write this in a letter to Labor Department. And by the way, affirmative action, we had a full affirmative action policy.
Right. It's not like you had anything to hide. Right. It's not like you had anything to hide. It was just the principle of this, the principle of the matter. Terrible.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, I took great pleasure, great personal pleasure, when we would be able to promote minority employees into management, mm-hmm. and promote them into higher levels of management, as well as some of the girls that came from the local Catholic high school, who didn't have any college education. Some of them actually went up to become supervisors and then managers. So I actually took personal pleasure in it. But anyway, so our lawyer wrote the letter to the Labor Department, and to the Labor Department's credit, which I've never seen this done with us in any other government agency, ever before, ever after, they contacted us, our lawyers, they said, you know what? We have no choice. being that you're a government supplier now, the computer kicked out an inspection of your affirmative action policy. Just make sure you have the policy on the table when we walk in. They walked in, they looked at the policy for 5 minutes, they walked out, everything was fine. So that is the one good story I have about government agencies. I have a whole lot of bad stories for you also.
Well, what do we do? We're out of time. what the time flies. Every guest says that on the show. Like, I can't believe it, we're out of time. Well, a special thank you, Dr. Roberts, because you shared so much in last week's show, this week's show. This week's show will be up on the archives by Tuesday morning. And, you know, so many people listen on Spotify or Google Play or whichever particular platform you consume your media. It will be there by Tuesday morning, the entire episode. And, of course, going to MYBRadio.com. That's where you can access every single past guest that we've had on this program. Well, that brings to a close this great edition. Tune in again next Sunday night for another great edition of Mind Your Business, right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Safliff. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Safliff has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.